DogNation.com. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented by Marco's Pizza. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
The main thing that your friends who are not Georgia fans, to the extent that you have friends who aren't Georgia fans, sometimes when I bring this subject up, I see from people either on Twitter in the comment section who say, who says I have any friends who aren't UGA fans? Well, some of you do have friends or family that don't cheer for the Dogs. They cheer for another SEC team. And the one thing I gather from what I've heard from y'all a bit is that the thing they like to rub in your face here as we head towards the start of the 2018 season, and folks, it's going to be here before you know it, but the thing that people seem to want to sort of throw up at you and remind you of over and over again is Georgia's got so much to replace from 2017. All those great players that helped Georgia get to the college football playoff last season, many of them are gone. If you just look at the defensive side of the football for a moment, Roquan Smith is not walking through that door for 2018. Davin Bellamy is not walking through that door for 2018. Lorenzo Carter, you could say the same thing about the secondary and guys like Dominic Sanders and Aaron Davis. And there is clearly no doubt that Georgia's got a lot to replace. That's one of the big storylines we'll be following here coming up in just a couple of weeks when a summer practice begins for the Georgia Bulldogs. Will new leaders emerge? Will productivity be replaced? That's also a big part of this as well. That's a fair conversation to have, and we'll probably have it in large measure over the course of the next few weeks. But there is one of those position groups depleted by departures that there is at least some evidence to suggest it may just be fine in 2018. That position group that I'm talking about is the outside linebackers. Now, there are probably a lot of reasons why this is potentially true, but there's one in particular I want to point out to you today. Pro Football Focus is a group that I cite from time to time. They are kind of a, I guess, sort of the crossroads of analytics and film study a bit. Some people within the sort of nerdiest corners of the football internet criticize Pro Football Focus for some of its evaluations. I sort of like their Twitter account, at least. That's about as deep as I get into it when it comes to Pro Football Focus. From time to time, they tweet out some pretty interesting stuff when it comes to college football, because they do have their own college football account here as well, and it's some sort of interesting sort of statistical deep dive from time to time. And one of the guys they focused on a few days ago, and I've been wanting to talk about this for a while here on our program, we just haven't had time to, that is Georgia outside linebacker DeAndre Walker. Here's what Pro Football Focus tweeted about him not too long ago, and I'm going to take PFF at its word here, and it's a pretty interesting snapshot at the season that Walker had last season, and potentially a promise of what might happen for him in 2018. Let me read it to you here. If you're watching on video, you can obviously see this, and if not, I'll do my best to describe it all. Pro Football Focus, their college Twitter account, says, Georgia linebacker DeAndre Walker rushed the passer just 111 times last year, but racked up 26 total quarterback pressures, recording the highest pass rush productivity in the process. That's not an easy thing to say, so let me try that one more time. Sort of like a tongue twister of sorts. He says the highest pass rush productivity in the process last year, and they give you kind of a graphic box here with some numbers that he was on the field for 111 pass rush snaps last year and got 26 total pressures. That includes 6 sacks, 5 hits on the quarterback, and 15 hurries. And that pass rush productivity percentage of 18.7 was number one in the country a year ago. Now, how about that? DeAndre Walker, who some people might describe as a bit of a situational pass rusher a year ago, but when he was in that situation, pretty productive, to the tune of an 18.7% pass rush productivity rating, according to Pro Football Focus a year ago. And to me, that is pretty important here. That's not nothing. That is something that Georgia can have lean on here in 2018, because this is an area in which I think Kirby Smart's been pretty candid that if you want to go back to the beginning of the 2017 season, like, you know, those final practices heading towards the start of the 2017 season, when it comes to the pass rush, Kirby Smart said, listen, this is an area that is still very much a work in progress for UGA. I think what he said a year ago is probably also true here for 2018 as well, which makes Walker a big part of this. In fact, here is Kirby on that subject from last August.
That's one of the big things we've tried to improve. So you can improve your pass rush by bringing more guys, or you can rush four better. And obviously I like to rush four better than bringing more guys. So we've tried to find ways to do it. But it's not always been exactly what we wanted, what we want to create, but it's certainly improving.
I think that's an interesting look, and I think most of your best defensive coaches will mirror the opinion expressed by Kirby Smart there. Yes, it's great to sack the quarterback. It's great to pressure the quarterback. But if the only way you can do that is by bringing extra pass rushers, the old school idea of a blitz, if that's the only way you get that pass rush, then at that point in time, you've probably put your secondary in harm's way. You've probably made a strategic decision that's going to hurt your defense in other areas. So he says it's great to get a pass rush, but it's even better if you get that pass rush with just the four guys up front. And more of DeAndre Walker in 2018 may give Georgia a chance to do that for a group that has been, as Kirby Smart just described, a bit of a work in progress. Let me give you some numbers that back that up. If you want to go back to Mark Richt's final year at Georgia in 2015, believe it or not, Georgia had just 21 sacks that year. That's well below what you would expect a top-flight defense to be able to put together. And in 2015, Georgia really wasn't a top-flight defense. They were good, but not great. Then in 2016, in Kirby Smart's first year, you do see an indication of, even for a bad team, a team that only finished 8-5, you do see an indication of areas in which Kirby Smart was providing some improvement to UGA. Georgia in 2016 goes from 21 sacks a year before to 29 sacks, an 8-sack improvement from 2015 to 2016. In 2017, an overall much better defensive performance, one of the top defenses in the country, you saw another statistical rise for Georgia when it comes to sacking the quarterback. They go from 29 sacks in 2016 to 34 sacks in 2017. But get this, and here's where it's important. Those 34 sacks for Georgia, just good enough for sixth best in the SEC here. So Georgia's getting better. Even a great defense, or very close to a great defense for Georgia in 2017, wasn't particularly great when it comes to sacking the quarterback, having just 34, good enough for only sixth best in the SEC. Now you may be saying, well, why does that matter? What about that number in particular is important? Well, if you look at in the sort of the college football playoff era, the most dominant defenses, the most consistent programs, putting themselves back in the college football playoff year after year after year, a high sack total seems to be a pretty common denominator for a lot of these teams. Go back to last season. In 2017, Clemson, one of the top three sack producers in the country, they were actually number one overall for 2017 with 46 sacks. They were in the college football playoff. Ohio State didn't make the playoff, but could have. It had 45 sacks as well. Go to 2016, two of the top three sackers in the country in terms of programs producing the most sacks. Alabama had 54. Clemson, once again, had 49. They make the college football playoff. Same thing for 2015. Alabama and Clemson both make the college football playoff. They were both in the top three of the country when it comes to sacks. Bama had 52. Clemson had 48. So what you see here is, going back the last 3 years, the teams are in the playoff over and over and over again. Alabama and Clemson, they are also teams in the top three of producing sacks year after year after year. So a lot of the conversation that we have right now for Georgia centers in on, what are those sort of final frontiers for UGA? What are those final steps that Georgia needs to take as a program to go from being very good, which Georgia was a season ago, to being great, consistently great, the way that an Ohio State, a Clemson, and Alabama have been? I think this particular stat, maybe more so than anything else, speaks to Georgia's opportunity to do that. Georgia needs to produce more sacks. And last season, DeAndre Walker, playing in a limited role, might have been better doing that than people realize. Now, my guess is here in 2018, when he's on the field more, he's going to become more of a household name. He's already appreciated by Georgia fans. He's going to be known a lot more by fans around the region and college football observers around the country. And more getting after the quarterback by DeAndre Walker might also help Georgia take that step towards becoming a truly elite defense for 2018 and many years to come. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. We're presented by Marco's Pizza, and it's great to have you with us however you get to us today. You watch us on video, 10 a.m. on the Dog Nation Facebook, Dog Nation YouTube page, or the Dog Nation Twitter feed. We appreciate you watching us and putting up with my big fat face. And for those of you that like listening to the show, thanks for checking in on our audio versions. However you may be doing that, if you're in the Athens area, that may mean the radio for you on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref. We love being on the radio in the Classic City at noon every day. We're glad to have you checking in there. Or podcast form, kind of the on-demand feature of the show, wherever podcasts can be found, like Apple Podcasts, the Google Podcasts app there for the Android devices, the world-famous DogNation.com. Many of you listen to the site every day, or the Dog Nation app. We just appreciate you being a part of Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza, and really appreciate Marco's Pizza being with us as well. Say hello, Primo, right now. The great offer from Marco's Pizza, two medium, two-topping pizzas for just $6.99 each. This is a great way to make everybody in the family happy. You get two toppings on one pizza. You get two toppings, a different couple toppings on the other pizza. Or maybe you're like me and you sort of nibble off both the pizzas. Either way, that's a great deal. Two medium, two-topping pizzas for just $6.99 each. It's authentic Italian pizza made every store, every day, the Italian way. Go to Marcos.com to find the Marcos closest to you. And it's great to have Marcos Pizza here on a Dog Nation Daily each and every day. It's also really good to have Mike Johnson, my partner from SEC Country Live, on the program. We'll catch up with him coming up in just a few minutes. A lot to get to with Mike today, and some of it may be a bit contentious. It seems like Mike and I have been kind of butting heads on a couple of issues as of late. One of those that came up on SEC Country Live yesterday, I wanted to spend a couple minutes talking about here on this program today. Alabama kind of boasting, kind of bragging a bit, and I think a lot of Georgia fans maybe rolling their eyes about this just a little bit. Alabama put out a tweet the other day of bragging about the top quarterback room in the country. This is a phrase that has been kind of kicked around a bit. And I guess we give some of the credit for this to Barton Simmons from 24/7 Sports and CBS Sports the other day, who wrote his top 25 QB rooms in the country. He had Georgia pretty high at number 5. He didn't have Alabama as the best, but he did have them number 2 in the country, which I guess, at least according to the one writer, puts them ahead of UGA. And well, Bama's still sort of bragging about that. They, on their own football Twitter account, they put out a tweet that was like, hey, look at us. We're the best quarterback room in the country. In fact, let me show you the tweet. I think we have the tweet here from Alabama on this. You see the picture there of Jalen Hurts. It says, best QB room in the country. Jalen Hurts, Tua Tagovailoa, hashtag out work yesterday, and hashtag roll tide. And going along with that tweet from Alabama, they also had a video where they kind of show off, and we'll show you some of this on video here too. Take a look at this as they kind of show off Jalen Hurts. They sort of show off Tua Tagovailoa. I have no idea why they shoot this vertically. If you're listening right now, you obviously can't see this, so I'll do my best to describe it. This video is sort of shot sort of like long ways, kind of the way that people seem to shoot the department store fights on Black Friday, with the kind of long angle on that, vertical angle on that. I don't know why they don't go horizontal on this, but nonetheless, that's what Alabama does there. And they're obviously really proud of Jalen Hurts and really proud of Tua Tagovailoa. And what I said yesterday, and what I'll repeat here today, is I don't know that this video necessarily pulls off what Alabama wants to pull off here. I mean, I think what they're trying to say is, hey, what some people think of as a quarterback controversy, we think of as a great thing. This is sort of like Alabama's version of spin control, to use a political word. That this is not a competition veering towards controversy. This is a dream team of sorts. Jalen Hurts, who does what he does well, Tua Tagovailoa, who does what he does well. But for me, when I watch this video, all it reminds me of is the potential problems that Alabama will have, because I don't know that Tua Tagovailoa or Jalen Hurts would describe themselves as being a part of the best quarterback situation in the country. I think individually they would tout themselves for the honor of maybe being the nation's top quarterback, but I don't think they look at themselves as a dynamic duo. In fact, I think they look at the other as a bit of a nemesis. We know this is true because Jalen Hurts' dad, Avarian Hurts, went to Bleacher Report a couple of months ago and said if his son wasn't the starting quarterback, he'd become the top free agent in college football, essentially threatening to transfer if he didn't get the starting nod. Tua Tagovailoa in Hawaii, his home state, recently also brought up the notion of a transfer. Another reason why you can say that the Alabama quarterback situation may not truly be the nation's best is because recently Nick Saban felt the need to go public sort of talking about all of this. He was asked about whether or not the quarterback situation was going to be tough, but in the midst of explaining why it would not be a tough choice between Tua and Jalen Hurts, he essentially challenged both of them to zip it and keep quiet with the media. Here is Nick Saban, I think, sort of proving my point for me.
It won't be difficult at all, because I think what we're trying to do is give the guys an opportunity, and that's the fair thing for both of them. So that's really what our goal is. I think that both players need to know that they need to win the team. That's what they need to do. And the best way for them to do that is stay focused on what they need to do. And anything that they do that brings attention to themselves probably erodes the opportunity for that to happen. So I'd appreciate your help in just allowing it to happen. It's not going to happen any faster. You're not going to make it happen faster. It's going to be a process that we go through, and that's the way it's going to be.
So you've got Nick Saban saying, hey, media, help us out here, because them drawing attention themselves erodes what's happening there within our own locker room. And for me, that's an example of why it's hard to imagine the Alabama quarterback situation truly being the envy of all of college football when you have that potential potential tension. On the other hand, at Georgia, where I think an authentic competition is going to be waged between Kirby Smart and Justin Fields, I think that's the better overall scenario with, frankly, the better overall talent when it comes to Fromm and Fields. In fact, when Kirby Smart was recently on the sports radio station WJOX in Birmingham, he talked about the competition that was going to be staged between these two quarterbacks and how his decision was ultimately going to be made. I like Kirby's description here a lot more than I like Saban's. Here is Kirby, in fact.
Well, you compete. I mean, you let guys come out and compete. I think sometimes you guys think that we just make a decision and just go with it. I mean, we do what happens in practice. We have scrimmages. We've got 25 practices before our first game. And we're excited about those opportunities to find out how much better Jake can get and how much better Justin can get. And both of them do a good job managing our team. Both of them great in the locker room. So I'm excited to see where they go.
Yeah, I'm excited to see where they go, too. And obviously, I may be a biased observer on this, but the bottom line for me is I'm not trading Fromm and Hurts for Fromm and Fields for Tua and Hurts. I like the nature of the Georgia competition better, and frankly, I just think that Justin Fields is a better talent than Jalen Hurts, and I think there's a very good chance that Jake Fromm's also a better talent eventually, proven out over the course of a college career, than Tua Tagovailoa. But someone who likely disagrees with me is my buddy Mike Johnson. Let's bring him on right now here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza. I love working with him in the afternoon, although he doesn't always love everything that I say. It is my buddy Mike Johnson, the former Alabama All-American, a great, great analyst when it comes to college football. And Mike, first of all, let me say good morning. Thanks for being here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza today.
Hey, man, how's it going? I can tell from the lead-in that I'm getting led into the lion's den right now as far as this conversation goes.
not at all. You and I have always been very good about having these kinds of things in sort of a level-headed way. But I will admit that I do find it funny when Alabama puts out there in their video, and not listen, I'm not easily offended. I'm not necessarily offended by Alabama saying it has the best quarterback room in the country, but the point that I tried to make to you yesterday, and I guess we'll try to have it here on this conversation as well, I think this is Alabama trying to put spin on something that probably doesn't work as well on me as it may work on some of the devotees to the Crimson Tide. When I'm watching that video of Hurts and Tua side by side, all I can think about is the fact that each one of these guys wants to vanquish the other, and that it's probably a little bit closer to being a controversy than the Alabama Twitter feed wants to make it sound. And by that standpoint, I think it's a pretty stark contrast to what I think is happening in Georgia right now. But it's certainly reasonable for you to have a different opinion than that.
Well, yeah, listen, I mean, we're talking about strength in quarterback rooms, right? And everybody knows in college football there's only one quarterback getting on the field most of the time. So I think anytime you're going to rank, a quarterback room like CBS Sports has done, like Athlon Sports has done, anytime you're going to rank a quarterback room, there's going to be somebody that looks at it and says, well, you know what, these guys are competing against each other. It's the same thing going on at Washington, same thing really going on at Georgia and a couple other places in the SEC. So I don't have a problem with Bama trying to turn it into a perceived strength. I think that if Nick Saban can make it work, that it, you know, could possibly be a strength of this football team. And honestly, I think they have two very good quarterbacks of which to choose from. So I know what you're saying. You dig back into it and you say, boy, one of these guys, you know, dealing with what Averian Hurts has said and what, is perceived from the Tagovailoa family. But as it stands right now, and I think that Nick Saban's goal is to try to keep both these guys on the roster and use it as the strength of this Bama football team moving forward, and hopefully both of these guys will see the field this year.
So here's the thing that you and I have kind of gone around and around about when it comes to this particular issue. My belief that last year Saban did not pick the better of the two quarterbacks for the lion's share of the season. I'm imagining that if you had been in Alabama practice, players would have seen Tua being better than Hurts on an everyday basis, because I don't think you make the change at halftime of the national championship game unless you had a lot of confidence that Tua is going to be able to get that done. The only way you gain that confidence is by seeing good practices, and my guess is Hurts probably practiced very similar to the way that he played. I think that when you make a decision to choose the less gifted, less talented player, I think you create a weird atmosphere for your team. Now, you can sort of mince words with me over, is that what happened in Alabama? But if we accept that premise for a moment, I do think that's a blueprint for Kirby Smart to be very careful with here. Now, I assume that Jake Fromm is going to do very well in a head-to-head competition against Justin Fields, at least for right now. I think a healthy Fromm can hold his own there. But if Fields is practicing better than Fromm, or if he's showing flashes during a game, then I think that Kirby Smart, at that point in time, has got the same onus on him that Saban had a year ago. At some point in time, you've got to acknowledge the guy that's practicing better or playing better. I think at Georgia, I do have confidence it's going to all work out just fine because I think that Fromm's probably better than Jalen Hurts is. But that, to me, is a potential issue that Saban dealt with last year and could have harmed the team had he not made the decision at halftime of the national championship.
Yeah, no, I agree with you on that. I think that, listen, I think that a lot of things started clicking into place once Alabama lost to Auburn in the Iron Bowl. It's like, hey, looking around, hey, what can we do differently? You know, we got, you know, our butt handed to us in this Iron Bowl against Auburn. That was the worst loss they've had to Auburn, really, in Nick Saban's tenure there at Alabama. So a lot of the things started being put in motion with that loss. Obviously, they didn't play in the SEC championship game. Georgia goes on to win the SEC championship. But then all of a sudden it starts leaking out before the Sugar Bowl that, hey, Tua Tagovailoa might play. And that was their first action since that Auburn game. So, listen, I think exactly what you're outlining right now in terms of the way I see it is the difference between maybe a general manager's opinion and a head coach's opinion. A general manager looks at it and says, hey, listen, the stats are this. We're performing at a level with this. When I look out at practice, I see the zip on the ball. I see plays being run this way. Head coach, though, has to take a little bit of that leadership into effect, has to look at, hey, listen, Jalen came in with a ton of hype. Jalen led us to a national championship game last year. Jalen scored what could have been a game-winning touchdown against Clemson the year before. So it's hard to really just kind of snatch the rug out from under a guy like Jalen that really has done a lot of good things for your program. I think that's the reason Nick Saban gave him every possible opportunity along the way until it got to the point where he couldn't give him that opportunity anymore and obviously making the change and winning the national championship.
Mike, before you joined us, something else we talked about on today's show was DeAndre Walker, a guy for Georgia last year, put up big numbers, sacking quarterbacks, tackles for loss. Pro Football Focus had him as the sort of, in terms of percentage basis, the most effective, you know, pass rusher in the country, in terms of pressuring a quarterback with the limited snaps he was on the field. I think it's probably fair to say that last year Walker was a situational pass rusher. This year in 2018, that's not the role that he's going to be in. He's going to be one of those guys like a Lorenzo Carter or a Davin Bellamy from a year ago who's going to be on the field a lot, being asked to do a lot of different things from Georgia. I know that's not your position, but goodness gracious, you battle against these outside linebackers every single game and every day at practice. What is it like for Walker here going from the situational pass rusher role to sort of the key cog in the defense role this year? How much easier or tougher does the job become now, given the fact that you're going to be asked to do more than just pin your ears back?
Yeah, I don't think there's any question about it. It's tougher. I mean, your legs are more tired. Your lungs are tired. You're having to, you know, be leaned on in the running game by some of these big offensive tackles, possibly offensive guards if they're pulling down the line of scrimmage. You're having to, in this day and age in football, you're having to use your legs a ton because you're reading some of these read options, trying to make plays out in the flat. It's a tougher job for sure. But I look at a guy like that and I say, listen, this guy's got a year under his belt in terms of what he was able to do last year. He kind of just dipped his toes in the water. And now he's ready for that job to escalate. It's one of those things in experience that you can't talk about enough in terms of college football. A year of experience in college football is worth all the weight in the world when you talk about some of these guys trying to transition from just being part-time players to full-time players. If this guy was just stepping in off the street and was a true freshman, and was trying to take over one of these starting jobs, you wouldn't feel that great about him. But the fact that he's been there in situational football before makes it a little bit easier in the transition. I think it's going to be tough, but he definitely seems to me like a guy that can handle that transition and handle it well.
And then on the kind of the same line here, one of the other things we kind of brought up a moment ago was the fact that Georgia has been, you know, good to very good in a lot of areas defensively now for quite some time. Even the last year of Jeremy Pruitt was pretty good. 2017, 2016 for Georgia, you saw some changes from Kirby Smart for even the better. But one area in which Georgia hasn't quite achieved elite status yet is sacks. You know, Georgia was just sixth in the SEC in sacks a year ago. I pointed out before you came on the program that if you look at the last 3 years, you know, two of the three, you know, top sacking teams in the country every single year are either playoff teams or a team like Ohio State last season that very well could have been in the college football playoff. These are the programs, Clemson, Alabama, Ohio State, that seem to be producing 40-plus sacks every single season. When you think about something that you were trying to prevent back when you were playing football, pass rushers to sack the quarterback, how important is that as sort of a line of demarcation for a truly elite team? Not just pressuring quarterback and not just getting stops, but actually getting in the backfield, sacking the quarterback and wreaking havoc in that regard. How important is that for an elite defense to be able to do?
Well, I think it's huge, and I think there's a, you know, I think there's a number of different ways to go about that. I don't think that that just means you have an elite edge rusher. I think that that means you have a defense coordinator that's willing to call blitzes. You know, be that from the star position, maybe somebody coming off the corner. You know, some of these weak side blitzes into these bootlegs. You have to have a defense coordinator that's willing to do that. Or you can have that edge rusher that's really willing to turn the corner and be able to push that tackle back into the quarterback's lap. And the reason I say it like that, B.A., willing to kind of turn the corner, not all defensive ends and not all defensive coordinators are willing to coach it like that. Some of these guys don't like the edge rushers. When you look at Nick Saban and Kirby Smart early in both of their careers at Alabama, it was a, hey, don't let the quarterback escape the pocket kind of rush. Hey, we're going to shove this guy in the chest and hopefully push him back into the quarterback. That's developed into a little more of an edge rush of, hey, I'm trying to turn the corner now. And I do look for Georgia to try to employ more of that turning the edge style of defense that this year. And I think that possibly does get their sack numbers up.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting thing to think about. That's really good insight there. At the end of your playing career at Alabama for your final season, you represented the Crimson Tide at SEC Media Days. SEC Media Days, an event that takes place every year in July where coaches and players sort of meet with reporters to talk about the upcoming season. That's going to happen again next week. It's going to be in Atlanta this year. And Mike, Georgia announced this week who its representative is going to be. Jonathan Ledbetter, who I think is going to have a great season in 2018. J.R. Reed, who's gotten a lot of attention this offseason. And Terry Godwin, who is already pretty good and could be on the verge of a breakout here in 2018 as well. You know, tell us about what it's like to sort of, you know, have to sort of be the one of the representatives for an entire team at an event where there's several hundred reporters asking you all kinds of questions, from the mundane to the silly to the maybe occasionally insightful. What's it going to be like for Godwin and Ledbetter and J.R. Reed next week representing their team at such a big SEC-themed media event?
Yeah, I can only speak for myself when I say this, B.A. My only goal of that weekend or that week or that day was, don't make a headline. Like, go in there, and I know that I hate it from our angle now because I am part of the media, and I look at it and I say, boy, I wish these guys would say something not boring. Well, that's exactly what they're trying to do. They're trying to go in and be boring. And it's tough because, listen, a guy like Ross Pierce-Baker, who plays center at Bama, he's going to go into that room, and he's going to be asked about Jalen and Tua probably 30 or 40 times before he gets out of that building. He's going to be there 4 hours. He's going to do video work with CBS. He's going to do video work with ESPN. He's going to do video work with everybody else out there. He's going to go through a car wash of a couple of ballrooms. They're going to go down Radio Row. And it's hard to stay out of the headlines, but that's what this guy's job is going to be. All three of these guys that are representing their team. Don't give these writers anything that can go on a tweet or at the top of a newspaper page because, you know, that's what their head coaches want. That's why these guys have been selected, because Kirby Smart trusts them to go in there and make sure their team is well-spoken, well represented, and not going to say anything outlandish that's going to make their team look bad.
Yeah, I think you bring up an interesting point there. I think it's probably fair to say that for the most part, the relationship right now between football coaches and the SEC and the media that covers the SEC is somewhat adversarial. The coaches do more every year to kind of, you know, lock the reporters out of coverage, and the reporters are sort of fighting for their, you know, seat at the table here. And what ends up happening, Mike, is, you know, you have a situation like SEC Media Days where Ledbetter and Reed and Godwin are going to show up there, and you say they're going to try to avoid controversy, but you also point out another point that all three of these guys are going to spend the entire week answering questions about players other than themselves, or at least the day. It's only a one-day event for these guys. You know, it's Godwin being asked about Fromm and Fields over and over again. You know, it's even Ledbetter and Reed will probably be asked about the quarterbacks a good bit there. It's one of those deals where you try to choose non-controversial sort of, you know, attention-seeking players to go speak on behalf of your team, but then they're facing nothing but questions about players other than themselves. It ends up being kind of a weird environment. It's not just SEC Media Days that's like that. It's really a lot of the press conferences, so to speak, are players talking about other players that are not themselves.
Yeah, and it's tough. It really is tough. A lot of people don't understand that some of these questions that people ask are catch-22 questions. There's not a good answer to it. You have to be able to deflect if you're a player. And honestly, almost all colleges right now have players go through those classes where they're trained in how to really react to media questions. But it's tough, man. I'm telling you right now, like, some of these Georgia guys might be asked the question of, hey, are y'all better suited to deal with Bama this year on defense? Well, you don't want to talk down about last year's defensive players, and you also don't want to sound like you're feeling too good about this year's defensive
players.
That's a
great
point. No matter what you say,
such a good point.
No matter what you say, it's going to sound bad. And so you have to make sure that you can go out in a place where you can talk about what you're doing, talking about the work you're putting in, And not go out and say something outlandish to some of these people that really just want something to be able to click on.
That is such a good point, Mike. I think that's a very astute thing to bring up. And I guess I am curious now. I'm going to ask you, you know, a lot of these guys that do show up, and it's not just the Georgia guys, it's all the other players as well that speak, you know, during the week, during the season, or in SEC media days, they all do seem to know how to say the right thing. When you were at Alabama, did an SID or a publicist or anybody like that ever flat just tell you what to say? Hey, if this question comes up, here's the best way to answer that. How do players learn what the right thing is? Because, I mean, I feel like when I was young and if I was asked a question, I just would have sort of popped off thinking whatever I thought, and it probably wouldn't have been the most team-approved, you know, line every single time. How do guys learn what the right thing to say actually is?
Well, it's tough, and honestly, you hear, you know, guys coming from that Georgia program that every answer sounds exactly what Kirby Smart would say in a lot of these situations, and it's learned. And listen, this is three guys at media days out of what 120 on the Georgia roster. The SID at Georgia and Kirby Smart sit down and they say, okay, which one of these guys do we trust? Which one of these guys is, you know, big enough star power that we can take them in there, but we also know they won't say anything outlandish. And it's very calculated. I've seen this kind of procedure go on where Nick Saban kind of picks it through. This is why he doesn't let coordinators talk. It's why they don't let true freshmen talk. But there's no guarantees. You just have to go with the guy that you trust to be able to go in there and say the right things. And hopefully that comes out on the other side, and you're not the headline after SEC Media Days is over.
Well, it's a fascinating conversation, Mike. We appreciate you giving some insight, both now as a media person who will attend the event and also as a former player who was one of those guys trying to stay out of a controversy's way there. Really good stuff. I'll look forward to seeing you 3 p.m. This afternoon for SEC Country Live. Mike, thanks for being on the show here today.
I'll see you later this afternoon, buddy.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Yeah, it's really fascinating for Mike Johnson to sort of get the idea of what it's like to be a player. And, you know, it's almost like when you think about big media events, and I know the average fan I don't think cares much about SEC Media Days, but it is one of those things where a lot of coverage is going to come out of it. And so it's always kind of interesting to sort of think about the process of how a program gets ready for a thing like this. And the way that you get your guys coached up. Now, in the case of the three guys from Georgia that are going, Ledbetter, J.R. Reed, Terry Godwin, there seems to be, at least in my mind, something of a theme here in terms of, you know, they're all three in their own right pretty great stories. You know, Ledbetter had some off-field issues. He's overcome those in a big way. I don't think there's any doubt he's one of Georgia's leaders for this upcoming season. J.R. Reed was a bit of an unknown commodity when he transferred from Tulsa, as has been pointed out 1,000 times. He was sort of thought to be the player to be named later in the D'Angelo Gibbs recruitment because of the fact that he and Gibbs are cousins with each other. Come to find out, J.R. Reed is a very good player in his own right, and the status of D'Angelo Gibbs for the moment is still very much unknown, which, by the way, I guess J.R. Reed will probably be asked about 9 million times next week. But nonetheless, you know, these guys have good stories. Godwin, maybe less, you know, publicized, but also a kind of a nice story as well in terms of over the course of the last 3 years, how he's kind of grown, I believe, in the mind of Kirby Smart. The stature that Godwin holds with Smart now, very different than it was in 2016. You can go back, we've got the audio. Kirby's pretty critical of Godwin back in 2016. Maybe not embracing all the stuff that wide receivers in the Kirby Smart program need to do. That's not the case anymore. Godwin has the hero catch against Notre Dame. But he's also one of the real, legit leaders with this Georgia wide receiving core. He's another one of these guys that's overcome a lot over the course of his time at Georgia. So I imagine one of these riders will be writing pretty glowing profiles of all three of these Georgia guys next week because they all have, you know, pretty interesting stories to tell. All right, let me transition here to our SEC Through. SEC Country Live 3 p.m. this afternoon on the SEC Country video channels. One of the things we talked about yesterday, and it's kind of ironic that we mentioned this because we also talked a lot about rushing the passer a moment ago here on our program. ESPN gets together and they do their thing about, hey, you know, it's sort of like a writer roundtable. They sort of almost, it's almost like a chain of emails is what it almost reads like. But it's the various writers saying, okay, who are the nation's top pass rushers going to be for 2018? And the names that come up all the time are Ed Oliver at Houston. By the way, one of the great recruiting wins of really recent college football history was Tom Herman when he was Houston coach, getting Ed Oliver to come there to Houston. That's a huge win. He's a great pass rusher. He shows up on a list like this. You got Nick Bosa at Ohio State that sort of shows up on a list like this. You know, Clemson gets a name on this list, but nobody from the SEC. And I thought that Mike Johnson had an interesting point about this, that, you know, Nick Saban and now Kirby Smart seem to sort of forego the superstar pass rusher. You know, Missouri's had a lot of those guys. Shane Ray, Michael Sam, Charles Harris. You want to go back to Sheldon Richardson. Tennessee's had those guys. Jonathan Kongbo is supposed to be that guy now. One of the reasons why the SEC is not thought of as an elite pass rusher league, I think, at the moment, is because Kongbo and others haven't lived up to the hype. But it was Derek Barnett not too long ago. You know, you've got these really good, you know, history of outside linebacker slash defensive ends in the league. But for the most part, a lot of these, you know, sacks as of late have been kind of done by committee. You had six SEC teams a year ago that had more than 34 sacks. So you've got some guys producing, some programs producing sacks, but you don't really have that elite pass rusher in the league right now. We'll see if that changes, both in terms of who Georgia produces and who Georgia has to face. Obviously, Clavon Chaisson for LSU is a potential name to think about there. Auburn's got a really good defensive line. Maybe someone emerges there from that group. But for right now, at least, in terms of the elite pass rushers around the country, the SEC's not thought to be in that conversation. I thought this was really interesting from USA Today, who had its top 10 wide receivers in the country, and there were three SEC names on the list. Now, two of those names show up on every wide receiver list. A.J. Brown from Ole Miss gets a ton of praise. Deebo Samuel from South Carolina gets a ton of praise. Y'all know that one of the things I like about Samuel is not just his ability to be a wide receiver, but also the fact that he's a really dynamic kick returner as well. But you can't really find any wide receiver list that doesn't include a lot on Deebo Samuel and A.J. Brown. What was interesting, though, is that in the USA Today list compiled by Paul Meyerberg, the other name that comes up here from the SEC is the Texas Tech transfer to LSU, Jonathan Giles. And this is relevant for Georgia because Georgia goes to LSU in October. And I've said before, over and over again, that I don't know that LSU is I know they're not great. I've suggested, I'm not even sure they're a good team in 2018, just given the problems that Ed Orgeron's had there in Baton Rouge. But if Giles is as good as some people think he could be, the transfer, he had 1,100-yard season was last year playing in Lubbock. If he's as good as some people think he could be to go along with the two freshman receivers like Jamar Chase and Terrace Marshall, if Joe Burrow, the transfer quarterback from Ohio State, fits in there, all of a sudden that game early October against LSU is as dangerous as it sort of seems to be on paper. The sort of, you know, metamorphosis of thought about Georgia going to LSU was, oh, Death Valley at night, which the game will probably be, that's a tough game. And then people started saying, well, maybe LSU's not that good. I kind of find myself sort of swinging back around to the mindset of, you know what, maybe that LSU game for Georgia on the road is going to be a real legitimate challenge. Georgia's probably a fairly significant favorite there. But nonetheless, that's a real game to deal with. A couple other quick stories let me get to here. Alabama lost a 2018 signee to junior college. We've seen an Auburn guy deal with this. Georgia's had its share of trouble in this regard. Jordan Davis, an Alabama signee, now going to a Mississippi junior college instead of being an enrollee for Alabama here in 2018. I sort of joked about this yesterday that maybe we've sort of reached our full cap on Jordan Davis's players named Jordan Davis in the SEC. Alabama's version of Jordan Davis not enrolling on campus there. And then something else I wanted to bring up. Dennis Dodd, CBSSports.com, does his hot seat rankings every single year. It's sort of a rating from 0 to 5 in terms of how hot of a seat every coach is on, and even new coaches get ranked on there somehow. And with Dennis Dodd, to the extent that he takes his own number seriously here, he had Jeremy Pruitt, the new Tennessee coach, at a 2 on this list, Dan Mullen, the new Florida coach, at just a 1, seemingly saying that Jeremy Pruitt was facing a bit more pressure in season 1 than Dan Mullen would be at Florida. And for me, it's the reverse of that. Neither guy is facing a ton of pressure in year 1. Probably there's always a bit of a honeymoon period for every new coach that gets hired. Georgia fans were patient, after all, with Kirby Smart in 2016. But in terms of which group is the least patient, right now, I do think it's Florida. I think the Tennessee fans are sort of a little bit more realistic about the dire straits their program was left in by Butch Jones and the former athletic director John Curry. But Florida fans hear what Steve Spurrier said yesterday about competing with Georgia. Dan Mullen's had some big talk. The athletic director Scott Strickland's had some big talk. Sometimes that big talk has a way of backfiring, and I think it backfires for Florida to the tune of maybe a little more expectations, which can be translated quickly into pressure. I'm not telling you that Florida fans expect to win the division this year, but if they go 6-6, 7-5, which I think is a real possibility, I think a lot of Florida fans are going to be disappointed. I think that Dennis Dodd then will be proven wrong by the way that he evaluated the pressure that's actually facing Dan Mullen, and will make that your SEC through. And here on Dog Nation Daily presented by Marco's Pizza, I wanted to mention, you know, sometimes y'all like it when I mention Georgia performers from other sports. Not everybody loves it, but at least it seems worth a mention today to brag on former UGA tennis star John Isner, who is now heading to the semifinals at Wimbledon after knocking off, and I'm going to butcher this name, Milos Raonic. That's a Canadian tennis player, I believe. He beats him in the quarterfinals of Wimbledon. And now Isner will head to the Wimbledon semifinals. And here is the stat that Georgia sent out, and I find this to be amazing. According to UGA's Sports Information Department, that Isner becomes just the fifth American since 2005. Just the fifth American since 2005 to make a Grand Slam semifinal. Tennis has become a sport dominated by performance outside the United States. Isner not just representing UGA here, but representing all of USA here by getting to the semifinals of Wimbledon. He'll also play in the semifinals a tennis player that he battled during his time at UGA. I think that's a really fascinating story, and great job by John Isner, who's rolling there, a part of the Fortnite at Wimbledon, back before Fortnite was a video game. It was sort of a moniker associated with Wimbledon, and John Isner continues to roll there. So congratulations to that former UGA tennis star. And it sort of gets me thinking about our Dog Day Q&A for today. I know a lot of you follow Isner's career really closely. I will admit I'm not really a tennis expert. I do cheer for Isner. I remember he had that long marathon match at what I think was Wimbledon a couple years ago. I remember sort of being a part of that and watching that with him. But overall, I don't know much about the ATP Tour. I don't really know a ton about tennis, period. But I'd obviously cheer for Isner. I am kind of curious to find out from you, which former UGA athletes you still support, whether it be guys that have gone on the NFL. I believe that is Kendarius Caldwell-Pope, I believe, is Georgia's only former dog in the NBA. I'm sort of curious to find that out. I'd love to have you reach out to me on that. You can hit me up on Twitter, at Dog Nation Daily, or here live on video. We'll take some of these comments on our Facebook page and our YouTube page. I'm sort of curious to find out which former UGA stars you still support, whether it be a couple of guys in Major League Baseball, like, say, Alex Wood. I mentioned Caldwell Pope, John Isner here. For me, the guys I probably follow the most are the ex-UGA golfers in the PGA Tour. I like that group. I even like Bubba Watson, although not everyone does. I love Kevin Kisner. He's a big UGA football fan. I follow that group of former UGA athletes probably more than any really other group from any other sport, but I'd love to have you weigh in as part of our Dog Day Q&A for today. For now, though, that'll have to wait as we get ready to wrap up our program here, and of course, we'll do it the same way we always do. Y'all know I'm a Gator hater. I think my credentials on this are pretty authentic. And I believe that 107 days from right now, Georgia goes back to Jacksonville and gets another win over those lousy, stinking Gators. It's our Gator Hater Countdown right here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza. There was also one more thing I wanted to mention before we got out of here today. I saw where 24/7 Sports had its ranking of the 25, I believe their phrasing here is the most intimidating stadiums, home field advantages in all of college football. And it's a slideshow. I don't know how seriously they took this, but to the extent that it does matter, they put Georgia fifth. Sanford Stadium came in at number five on this list. And I'm not even sure, maybe I'm wrong about this, I'm not even sure that diehard Georgia fans think of Sanford Stadium as intimidating as apparently 24/7 Sports does. But I do think that's kind of a cool goal for Georgia fans to establish in the future, making Sanford Stadium a really tough place to play. We'll talk more about that soon right here on Dog Nation Daily.